Our learning today is dedicated to a prayer for Rafua Shleima, for Bracha Henna Basora Rivka. She's 8 weeks old and is ill, needs a Rafua Shleima in Hashemah. We are learning for her schools. We're starting on side two, because today is, as I had promised, a continuation of last week's shiur, but this is going to be pretty much devoted to Parashat Vayishlach. You're not going to lose out anything over here. But we started already with the Gemara in Tlachas. We're going to go over that Gemara. The Gemara says, Amar Rav Elazar, Amar Rav Avina, second son, Olav HaFar. Amar Rabbi Elazar, Amar Rabbi Avina, Kol HaOmer Tehillah LeDavid Bechol Yom Shalosh Pa'amim. Whoever says Tehillah LeDavid 3 times every day, Muftach Lo Shehu Ben Olam Haba, is guaranteed that he is worthy of the world to come. We know Tehillah LeDavid, which is chapter 145 in Tehillim. We know it as Ashrei, because we begin chapter 145 with two psukim at the end of chapter 144. Ashrei Yoshev Yisrael Yehudah. Ashrei Ha'am Shekachav. Ashrei Ha'am Shehashem Adav. Tehillah LeDavid. And from Tehillah LeDavid on and further, the psukim of Ashrei follow the Aleph Bet. Aron Chas Bechol Yom Avarachako Gadol Hashem Uvolom Yom. By the way, also the last pasuk in Ashrei, Va'anachnu Nevorecha, after Tehillat Hashem, which is the last letter of the Aleph Bet, the Va'anachnu at the end is also a pasuk that is taken from another place in Tehillim and added there, which means that there are two psukim added at the beginning of Ashrei, one pasuk added at the end of Ashrei, and then of course the great mystery is the pasuk that's missing in the middle of Ashrei. So the Gemara goes on to say, my time, first of all, the Gemara says, what is the reason, what's so significant about Ashrei, that somebody who says Ashrei 3 times a day is guaranteed that he has a share in the world to come? Incidentally, you have to know that there are texts that don't say Sholosh Pa'amim, there are texts that simply say whoever says Tehillah LeDavid every day, which may mean that one can even achieve Olam Haba by saying it only once a day. Kal v'chomer, if you say it 3 times a day, and of course we in davening say it 3 times a day. We say it once in Pesukei Nisim at the beginning of davening, after Shmona Esrei, Ashrei Yivol L'Tzion, and then before Mincha we say Ashrei again. So now, what's so significant about it? So the Gemara says, my time, what is the reason for its special significance? Elein Mishumdaat Yomi Alephet, if you can say it's because it follows the letters of the Alephet. So Neymar, the Gemara asks very good, Neymar Ashrei Tamimei Derech. There's a chapter in Tehillim 119 where you don't have the Aleph Beis once. You have the Aleph Beis 8 times. The first 8 psukim begin with Aleph, the second 8 psukim begin with Beis. As I pointed out last week, that's by a hesped or by an unfailing. When we say the name of the Nifter, we say the name using the psukim in chapter 119. So the Gemara says, if you're going to tell me because it Ashrei is so significant because it follows the alphabet, if so, well, there's something better. You can say Ashrei to me make that up. The Atiyah become the alphabet. It comes with 8 times the alphabet. Elo, so the Gemara answers, you know what's special about Ashrei? Because in Ashrei you have Poteach et Yodecha. That passage really expresses the incalculable kindness of God. God opens up his hand and he feeds all flesh and blood on the face of this earth. What an enormous act of great chesed. Everybody is provided for. And if there are people who go to sleep hungry at the end of the day, it's not God's fault, it's man's fault, who does not apportion food correctly, maybe even destroys who knows how many millions of acres by using it for all sorts of other things. There is all that is necessary to provide for all of mankind and animal kind, all exists on the face of this earth. So the Gemara says, maybe it's because it says that great pasuk of praise. So the Gemara says, Neima Halalak Gadol. So then, if that's what's significant about Ashrei, then there's the Halal HaGadol. The Halalak Gadol, those 26 Kila Olam Chazdos, there it says, Notain Lechem Lechol Basa. God gives bread to all flesh on the face of the earth. Kila Olam Chazdo, because his kindness exists forever. So therefore the Gemara says, so the Gemara, next column, yeah, Elo Mishum, the right-hand column, Elo Mishum, the Yidbei Tarti. Ashrei has two things. Ashrei has the fact that it goes by the Aleph Bet, and the Aleph Bet, Chazal say, that the world was brought into being by God by using various configurations of the alphabet. The alphabet has tremendous power and sanctity. The idea that something goes according to the alphabet has great meaning in the world of Kabbalah, Jewish mysticism. Serious, serious thing. So therefore Ashrei has both. Ashrei has the great pasuk of Poteach et Yodecha u'masbi al chochad also, that God feeds all on the face of this earth, and it also goes according to the Alephbet. Chapter 119 has the Alephbet, but it doesn't have a pasuk that describes God's great kindness of providing for the whole world. Hodu l'Hashem ki tov has the pasuk that describes God's no saying lechem lechol basa, but it doesn't go according to the alphabet. Ashrei has them both. Gemara goes on to say, Omer Rav Yochanan, mipnei marlo nema nun ba'ashrei. Why is there no nun in Ashrei? Malchuscha, malchut kol olamim, u'memshaltecha bechol dor v'dor. That's the pasuk that begins with mem. There is no pasuk that follows it with nun. And immediately after it says, Somei Hashem l'chol hanotlin, God gives aid and assistance, support to all who fall. So Rabbi Yochanan says, Bnei Ma, lo nema nun in Ashrei. Why is there no nun in Ashrei? So he says, Mipnei sheyesh bo ma'palatam shel Somei Yisrael. Because the nun is representative of the fall of, quotation marks, the enemies of Israel. Enemies of Israel does not mean enemies of Israel, it means precisely the opposite. It's a euphemism for Israel. We don't want to say out something, a sentence like, because the nun represents the fall of Israel. Chas v'shalom. So we say because it represents, our kapucha v'aludoyim, it represents the fall of Sonei Yisrael. And this is used very, quite often in Talmud and in other places. All right. How does the word nun represent fall, collapse? Because there's a possibility almost, because it says Nafla, Lo Tosif Kum Betulat Yisrael. She has fallen. Nafla, she has fallen. Lo Tosif Kum, she will no longer rise. Who are we talking about? Betulat Yisrael, the maiden, the virgin of Israel. Fallen, and will not rise again. Left hand column. The Gemara records an alternative explanation of this verse. B'machove, Eretz Yisrael is in Talmud Bavli. Eretz Yisrael is always referred to as Ma'arava, because Eretz Yisrael was to the west, really the southwest of Bavel. B'Ma'arava Omri, in Ma'arava they said, Metarzalei Hocha, they explained it positively. Learn a different shot in the Pasuk. Nafla, she has fallen. Lo Tosef, she will not fall again. Kum, Betulat Yisrael, arise. No, it's where's the comma in the Pasuk? In Bavel, they learned the Pasuk, Nafla, she has fallen, Lo, Tosif, Kum, she will no longer rise again. In Eretz Yisrael, they separated the Tosif from the Kum. They read it, Nafla, she has fallen, Lo, Tosif, stop, she will not fall again, and therefore, Kum, Betulat Yisrael, rise, O Virgin of Israel. We'll come back to this in just a moment. Let's just finish the Gemara. On Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak, Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak said, "Afilu hochi chazal David v'samchon beruach hakodesh." Even though he left out the nun, which represents the fall of Israel, in the pasuk that immediately comes afterward already, David says a pasuk that gives comfort and strength to the Jewish people. So meich Hashem lechol hanoflim. God supports and gives strength to all those who fall. So meich Hashem lechol hanoflim. The Vilna Gaon asks the following question on this Gemara. The Gemara says that in Eretz Yisrael they learned it differently. This pasuk, which is obviously negative, all of a sudden they turn it into something positive. She has fallen, no more, no more. The Vilna Gaon's question is, if you take a look at the pasuk within its natural habitat, in its context, it's the fifth chapter of Sefer Amos in Trei Asar. I left my big Tanakh at home, so I found this little one over here. Couldn't find anything better. And listen to the pasuk that precedes it. The beginning of the chapter is, Shimu at hadavar hazeh, listen to this, Asher anochi nosei aleichem kina beis Yisrael. Listen to this, I am going to talk lamentation about you. The whole chapter is a chapter that's so negative and so depressing, describing the fall, the collapse of the Jewish people. Ki cho amar shalokim, so says God, ho'ir hayotzeit elef tashir me'ah, a city that had 1,000 people will have 100, hayotzeit me'ah, the city that had 100, tashir asahal beit Yisrael. I'm reading from my Tanakh, you don't have it. And it goes on to talk about the suffering and the tragedy that will befall the Jewish people. So the Vilna Gaon asks, here is a chapter that clearly talks about absolute collapse. How can you take a pasuk at the beginning of this chapter and turn it into something positive? So he says something, and what he says is an idea that was expressed. We learned the Rambam last week. You remember last week we learned V'hoyal Zaracha Ka'afar Ha'aretz U'faratzto Yomo V'keit Motzafono V'necho Yitzig will be like the dust of the earth. The Rambam didn't say it precisely that way, but that's the way I learned Shem, that V'hoyal Zaracha Ka'afar Ha'aretz, the Rambam says, there will be moments in history in which your seed will be like the dust of the earth. You will be trampled upon. You will be trampled upon like the dust of the earth. So the Rambam's words of consolation were that what happens when one tramples upon dust, the dust rises to cover the one who tramples. So the Jewish people will ultimately rise and cover the graves of those who trampled her. But then I said, the pasuk goes on, "Vohi osamacha kafar haaretz uforash kol yomo b'keit motzafon b'efron." There is this automatic guarantee in history that when Israel reaches its lowest ebb, blessing, Jewish communities will spread throughout the world. I believe that's what the Gra is going to be answering on the question that we just asked. This pasuk talks, this perek, chapter 5, and almost is talking about an Am Yisrael that are crushed into the earth. Gra says, when it gets so bad that it can't get any worse, then you know Israel is going to rise. Israel must rise. It can't get worse when it can't get worse. Not only will it get better, but it will become better in an awesome and powerful way. So therefore, he says, this chapter that talks about the fall, the absolute fall and collapse of the Jewish people, Nafla, she's fallen so low, Lotosif, she can't fall anymore. And you know what happens at that point? Kum, betulat Yisrael, rise, O maiden of Israel. Right? Now, we're going to start at the beginning. Everything is going to relate to what we've said now. Parsha Vayishlach. Vayishlach Yaakov Malachim Lefanav Leisiv Achiv. Eretz Hosea, Yaakov sent angels before him to his brother Esau in the land of Seir, the field of Edom. And Vayitzar Tamli Mor, he commanded them, saying, Ko Tomim Adolid Esau, so shall you tell my master Esau, Ko Amar Avdecha Yaakov, so your servant Yaakov has said. By the way, our rabbis are unhappy with Yaakov being so obsequious before Esau. Maybe it was unnecessary to say Avdecha Yaakov, Avdecha Yaakov. But you give these goyim a finger, right? They won't take it in. Ko Amar Avdecha Yaakov. So says your servant Yaakov. In Laban Garti Vayechar Avata, I have lived with Laban, and I have tarried until now by Healy, and I have Shor, the Chamor, and Sol, the Eved, the Shivcho. I have a great deal of wealth. I have amassed a great deal of wealth. Oxen and donkeys, flocks, servants, maidservants, and I'm sending to tell my Lord to find favor in your eyes. I want to find favor in your eyes. Understand? We'll throw you something, a gesture. We're always making gestures. My wife keeps asking me for the last 15, 16 years, when is the other side going to make a gesture? Very good question. There are times that we agree on things. A very good, very good question. Anyway, by Yoshuvu HaMalachim, the angels return. And the English translation here as angels is because it's following Rashi. Rashi, very often the word malachim can mean messengers. No. Yaakov doesn't send stam messengers. Yaakov sends angels. You know what's important over here to understand malachim? There's always a big problem that a whole week passes by between one sedra and the next. The last pasuk in Vayetze was, after Yaakov disengages from Lavan, v'Yaakov holach l'darvo, Yaakov went on his way by Yivgu bo malachei Elokim. He meets a camp of angels. These are the angels who are coming to welcome him and escort him into Eretz Yisrael. From those malachim, he sent malachim to go to Esau. The angels returned and they said, we've come to your brother to Esau, and he's also coming toward you, 400 men armed to the teeth. Vayira Yaakov Yod. Yaakov was very frightened, by Yetzelo, and he felt It distressed him. Vayigal Yaakov Yod Vayetzo Vayachat Zitom Asher Ito, and he divided the camp that is with him. Vekatzon Vekabakar Vagamalil Shnei Machanot, he divides his entire camp into two camps. And the purpose of this is, he is putting his entire camp Bekonenut, military preparedness, ready for battle. Code 3 or whatever it is. Yeah. This is it, they're ready for battle. Now, I don't usually leave when I put in the English translation, I don't usually leave the comments on the side of the art scroll, but here I wanted it because it will point things out to you. They write over there, Esau advances to attack Jacob, and then military preparations. The first thing Yaakov does is prepares for war. And then, and what was the preparation? Vayomer, he said, if Esau is going to come against one camp and smite him, the other camp will survive. Vayomer Yaakov. Here, our English notation on the site says, prayer. After he has put his camp on a war footing, he prays. Vayomer Yaakov, Yaakov said to the Keov, Yavlom the Keov, Yitzhak, the God of my father, Avlom the God of my father, Yitzhak, Hashem ho amedavai, the God who said to me, you told me, shuv la'aretzachol ma'aret hefa, go back to your land and your birthplace, say tivoy mach, and I will be good with you, katolti mikol hachasadim. Katolti mikol hachasadim. I have been diminished, I'm smaller than all of this kindness that you have done with me, mikol ha'amet, and all of the truth, asher osito imadi, asher osito et avdecha, ki b'makli obrati et ha'yadi lezeh v'ata ha'yiti l'shnei machanot. When I crossed the Jordan going out to Chutz Laaretz, I crossed with no more than my staff in my hand, and then I've come back, and I am two great, massive camps. Hatzilein omiyad ochi miyad Esav. Save me, his purpose, save me from the hands of my brother, from the hands of Esav. Ki yorei onofi also, because I fear him, penyovo mihikani yeim albonim, lest he come and smite me, mother and children. I said this once, 45 years ago, in Neri Yisrael of Toronto. David Wolf was there, and I remember him looking straight in my eyes. I'm just going to say this in passing. There is a Beit Halevi, the great-grandfather of Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik, who was also Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik. He asks, and it's really all related, I'm relating it now to the Rambam we learned last week. He asks, the prayer is, Hatzileinu, please save me, Miyad Ochi, from the hands of my brother, from the hands of Esav. Why does he have to say, Miyad Ochi, from the hand of my brother, and Miyad Esav, and from the hands of Esav? If he would have said, Hatzileinu, God save me from the hand of my brother, how many brothers does he have? The Rebbeim doesn't understand that he has one brother. And if he would have said, Hatzileinu, Miyad Esav, God doesn't know who. So what? And there was a third option. He could have said, Hatzileinu miyad ochi Esav, from the hands of my brother Esav. Why two times miyad? Hatzileinu, please save me, miyad ochi, and miyad Esav. So the Beis Halevi says it, and it's all related to that Rambam of last week. The Rambam of last week said that there are different approaches that the enemies of Israel have taken throughout all of history. There were those who wanted to exterminate and destroy us utterly. The Amalekites, the Nebuchadnezzars, the killers throughout history. And then there are others who wanted to kill us with kindness. They wanted, let's dialogue together. Let's talk together. Let's learn from one another. Let's exchange ideas. So, Yaakov is praying to God, save me from Esav, the killer, but save me also from the Esav who's going to come against me as a brother, my great brother. Which one Which one is Yaakov more frightened of? He's more frightened of the Esav that comes with brotherly love, brotherly love. And I tell you, these brotherly loves, I said it before, they are creeping all over this country to literally kill us with kindness of a common covenant. And that we are grafted upon one another. Evangelical Christians who are great Zionists, 50 million of them, they're dangerous. They're dangerous. We have to keep our distance, but if I start talking about that, I'll never say shit today. But this is the prayer of Yaakov. Hatzileni no miyad achi. Achen vei. If we're going to have to live together, and save miyad Esau. Okay, that's his prayer. So wait, what happened over here so far? Yaakov has put his family on a war footing, ready to fight. Ready to fight. He prays to God. I'm afraid. And you said, etc. And then you know what he did? He begins sending gifts to Esau. He sends chamorim and gemalim and avalim and shivachos. He sends gifts. Sends gifts. So this is Rashi, there's the famous Rashi that says, Hitkin Atzmo, he prepared himself, L'shlosho Devarim. Yaakov prepared himself for three things. L'doron, gift, Tefillah, prayer, L'milchama, war. The problem with the Rashi, of course, is that Yaakov did precisely the opposite. And if you don't believe me, there it is, Atzkol has it. Military preparations, prayer, and tribute, gift. So he prepares himself first for war, then he prays, and then he sends gifts to Ezra. So of course, the pshat, as it appears in the Torah, is obviously, we'll have to think for a moment why Rashi says what he says, but of course this is the way to go about it. If he would send gifts first, when he is not prepared for war, the gifts will be meaningless. They will never be interpreted by anybody as extending a hand for peace. It will be seen rather as graft, as begging by sending gifts. Do you know when a gift means something? When the enemy knows that you are armed to the teeth, ready to do battle, and you are fearless, then you send gifts. That's really extending a hand for peace. Otherwise, it's no more than lowly, insignificant appeasement. And appeasement never works. A gesture is good, as long as you are flexing your muscles and you let the enemy know exactly what you're ready for. Prayer, you know, somebody can say, listen, the first thing he should have done is pray. He finds out that Esau's coming. No, can't be. Why? If he would pray first and prepare the war second, it might very well, it obviously leaves the impression that, okay, we said Ashrei, you know, maybe we said Ashrei Tmimei Derech, not in case prayer doesn't help, so we're going to go on to a war footing. But if you prepare for war first and then you pray, the prayer is infinitely more significant, because then it means, I'm ready to fight. But I know that the one who determines the outcome of the battle in the field is you. So prayer comes after preparation for war. Yes, Sarah?
In a previous lifetime when you spoke about this, you said that the reason Yaakov girded up his loins and became very chutzpah.
Don't say another word. Don't say another word. Don't say another word. I know what you want to say. And you know that I know.
I want you to tell it to all the others.
Okay. let me go about it, because, you know, okay, hang on. So, where was I? Ah, so therefore, the way Yaakov does it in the parasha is that he prepares for war first, he prays second. That means his prayer now means something. His prayer is where he is making it clear to Bnei Shlalem, I'm ready, but all my readiness means nothing if you're not going to be with me on the field of battle. And then, the gift that he sends afterwards is not the gift of the weak to the strong, which is pleading and begging for mercy. This is a gift that comes from the strong to let somebody else know, I can vanquish you on the field of battle, but I'm giving you a chance. That's a completely different kind of gift. Completely different kind. Rashi says, L'dodo l'tfila u'l'milchama. The order of Rashi is gift, prayer, and war. It is most probably, that's the way Yaakov would have wanted that it should play itself out. That the very last thing that he would have to do would be war. War is the last. First thing, I have my responsibility to see what can I do in order to avoid war. What do I do to avoid war? I send the gift. But even with all of my effort, prayer still has to be there that he should accept the gift. Rashi puts it in the order of how ultimately he wanted that it should happen. War was always the last option. But how did Yaakov indeed prepare himself? He has to prepare himself for war, then prayer, and then trigger. Okay, let's. Oh, you know. All right, so here. That's another problem when you have a whole week between Parshas Vayetzeh and Parshas Vayishlach. A whole week. So, of course, right, just. But what happened at the end of Parshas Vayetzeh? The end of Parshas Vayetzeh, a big section of the end of Parshas Vayetzeh is Lavan has gone off to shear the sheep someplace. Lavan isn't at home. Yaakov takes his wives together, let's say, we're going. And it says clearly, he fled. He ran. He ran. There's no Lavan here. I'm free. I can go. And what happens when Lavan finds out that Yaakov has fled? Lavan pursues him, and on the mountains of Gilad, he catches up with him. He rides hard, and in one day he does 3 days' journey, and finally they meet. Then, okay, and what happens when they meet? So what does the guy said Tzadik Lavan say to him? He says to him that. What did you do? Why did you run away? Why did you run away? And by the way, Pasuk describes it that way. Vayignov Yaakov et leiv Lavan ha'arami. Yaakov stole the heart of the Lavan the Aramean. I believe he did lo kiboreachu. He didn't. It's a very fascinating Pasuk. I really don't know what to do with it. That he didn't tell him that he's running away. Yeah? I believe he did lo. He didn't tell him. I'm running away. Bye, Lavan. I'm running away. Okay? Anyway, Lavan, Vagifra, Chubuchar, Shalom, Yaakov, and everything that belongs to him fled. And he's on his way to Gilad. Lavan, on the third day, he's told that Yaakov, Kibarach Yaakov, Nachamal, again, he fled. He took his family with him. He pursued him. He catches up with him. But during the course of that pursuit, God appears to Lavan in a dream at night and tells him, don't lay a finger on yon head of Yaakov Avinu. don't talk with him, neither from good nor no tov, vadra, nothing. And then finally, we have that whole confrontation between Yaakov and Lavan. What a confrontation. Oy, and if you ran away, did you have to steal my guards? And then Lavan goes through everything that belongs to Yaakov, goes through all of this. You see sometimes at the airport, when they have somebody and they start taking out everything from the suitcase, it has that bizarre. Such a shaman achanka, and I'm very happy that they're doing it to the other guy. Has to be, you know, we need security. Anyway, the end of that story is that finally the greatest speech in Tanakh, the greatest speech in, maybe even in all of literature. You know, I like these bombastic statements, but it is. It's an unbelievable. What have I done? What is my sin? Where have I erred that you have pursued me? And he describes 20 years in your house. During the day, the sun burned down upon me. At night, I froze in the cold. If one of the sheep was ever torn apart by a wolf, I would never bring it to you. I would take care of it myself. And you changed the terms of my employment 100 times. It's one of the great speeches of history. What effect does it have on Lavan? Lavan's response is, Habonim bonai, the sons are my sons, the habonim, the noisai, the daughters are my daughters, the chol asher atacho, and everything that you see here, legal, it's all mine. Okay, that's enough of a description there. The important thing is like this. What's going on over here? Lavan is approaching. You know what Yaakov should do? Divide the camp into two. In Yavol Lavan el Hamachaneh Ha'achat v'hikohu v'hoyo Hamachaneh Nishal Pleta. If he attacks one camp, the other camp. Fellas, kindlech, get out your swords, your bows and arrows. We're going to take this guy Lavan and we're going to wipe the floor with him. Do you know what happens here in this confrontation between Yaakov and Lavan? Yaakov is, I'll say the word, he's frightened. He's frightened. And most probably he would have been even more frightened until he hears Lavan saying that the God of your fathers appeared to me last night. Are these the same Yaakov? Is the Yaakov at the end of Parashat Vayetze who is standing in conflict with Lavan, is this the same Yaakov at the beginning of Parashat Vayetze? What's happening over there? It's two different Yaakovs! So, of course, the answer is, and it's a very significant answer, and it's something that we always have to remember. Certainly our leadership has to remember. The Yaakov-Lavan confrontation took place in Chutz Laaretz. The Yaakov-Esav confrontation takes place in Eretz Yisrael. The Jew in Eretz Yisrael is infinitely stronger than the Jew in Chutz Laaretz. It's a different Yaakov. He crosses the river, and he's in Eretz Yisrael. He is ready to stand up against Esau. Two different people. Geography, holy geography, makes the difference. Ultimately, of course, we're going to get to the point that's exactly the difference between Hanukkah and Purim. Purim, Jews had to beg for permission to defend themselves. Unfortunately, today we also have to justify our right to self-defense. Hanukkah, they didn't need justification from anybody. They went out to battle. They fought, and they vanquished the enemy. The difference between the two is, of course, Hanukkah is an Eretz Yisrael, and Purim was in Chutz Laaretz. The Jew in Chutz Laaretz is ultimately diminished before the Jew in Eretz Yisrael. The same thing, of course, is true, and I better get to the heart of this year. The same thing is true at the beginning of Parshat Lech Lecha. Beginning of Parshat Lech Lecha. Avraham is told by God, go to the land that I will show you. And he comes and he goes through the land finally made it to the promised land, and by the heat of all waters, there was a famine in the land. So what does Abraham do when there's a famine in the land? He goes down to Mitzrayim. But as he's coming to the border crossing of Mitzrayim, he becomes very concerned. Their passports describe them as husband and wife. No. He can't cross the border with that kind of passport. She has to be his sister. She has to be his sister because he's afraid. He is afraid. What will they do to him? And the fact is, once they come into Mitzrayim, Avraham Avinu is absolutely helpless. He waits for the ultimate knock on the door. The knock on the door comes, and Sarah is taken forcibly to the house of Paro, and Avraham can't do a thing. It's only God's intervention that saves him from Mitzrayim. And then when we learn that episode, 10 minutes later, if we're learning through the Parsha, we forget what we learned at the beginning of the Parsha, and then we come to the next episode. There's a world war going on. There are four kingdoms against five, and the four are more powerful, the four superpowers of the day. And a refugee from war comes and tells Avraham that Lot has been captured. Any hesitation? Immediately, he rounds up his 318 men, and out he goes on the midnight ride of Avraham Avinu, and he crushes the four superpowers of the day. This is the same Avraham who went to Mitzrayim? Same Avraham? Not the same Avraham. So what's the difference? Avraham in Mitzrayim is the Jew of Chutz Laaretz. Kemp doesn't have the power. Avraham in Eretz Yisrael? He goes out there and he does the job that has to be done. Alright? We're going to do this. We're going to go through two more Rashis, and then we will be able to get back to explain the Gemara that we started with. Gemara Bracha study. Number four, Yosef's brothers have come to Mitzrayim. Yosef is concerned that when Paro sees his 10 brothers, he's going to see these fellows, they look like they are men of power and might and substance, and he may want to draft them into the Egyptian army. And Yosef doesn't want that to happen in the worst way. So therefore he tells his brothers that, you know, when I bring you before Pharaoh, tell them that you're shepherds. Just plain shepherds. Egyptians don't like shepherds. If you're shepherds, you won't bother with them. So the pasuk says, when we say Achav lakacha misha anoshim, from part of his brothers, he took five men, by accident, gave us five of them and presented them before Paro. That's all. Five. Rashi discusses who are the five. This is one of the most unusual Rashis in all of Torah. You'll see that I'm serious when I say that. You'll see immediately that it is an extremely unusual Rashi. It says the following. He took those who were lesser in strength, those who may have seemed weaker than the others. She'en nirim kiborim, who don't look mighty. She'en yira otam kiborim, because if Paro will see that they're strong fellows, ya'asel tam, she'en milchama, he will make them men of war. Who are these five weaker ones, so to speak? Reuben, Shimon, Levi, Yisachar, Ubinyamin. Okay? How does Rashi know this? Otam, Shalokotam Moshe Shimotam, Kishaberchon, the ones whom Moshe did not double their names when he blessed them. You'll see what that means in a moment. We're talking about Zotabracha, the blessings of Moshe to the tribes. The names of the mighty ones are the ones that in Parshat Zohar Vacha, Moshe repeats them, blesses them. For example, the Zohar Yehuda, Shmar Shem Kol Yehuda. This is the blessing for Yehuda. God listened to the voice of Yehuda. Twice the name is mentioned. Ule God Amar, and to God he said, Baruch Marchin God, blessed is the one who expands God. Ule Naftali Amar, and to Naftali he said, Naftali Svaratzon, Naftali is sated. V'chein, Ule Don Amar, and to Don he said, Don Gur Aryeh, Don is a lion. V'chein L'Zvulun, V'chein L'Osher. Right? So what's Rashi saying about this one? That the ones that he brought before Paro were the weaker ones, those who don't look like they are strong, and they are the ones whose names were not said twice in Parshat Zohar. Now listen to, this is the unusual part of Rashi. Zeh l'shon b'reishit rabba. This is the version of Bereshit Rabba. Bereshit Rabba is the Medrash on Sefer Bereshit, and the Rashi adds something very significant yet strange. Shehi Agod Aser Yisrael. This is the Agod of the land of Israel. Now let me tell you something. Rashi mentions quotes from Medrash. Bereshit Rabba or Shemot Rabba or Vayikra Rabba, he quotes the Medrash 500 times, maybe 1,000 times. Never once does he identify it as the Medrash of Eretz Yisrael. He doesn't do it. Never! It's the only place. And he says, well, that's what the Medrash, and the Medrash is Agadah's Eretz Yisrael, the Agadah of the land of Israel. Avo b'talmid bavli shalom, Rashi goes on to say, but in our Babylonian Talmud, Rashi most probably quotes the Babylonian Talmud 2,000 times in all of Torah. Never once does he say, b'talmid bavli shalom. Never, doesn't. There's another pshat. Talmud bavli has a different pshat. What did they say over there? They say the ones who Moshe said their names twice, they were the weaker ones. And they were the ones that he grew up before power. That means Yehuda and Zvulun and Naphtali and God and Asher, the ones whom Moshe blessed twice, they were the weaker ones, and they were the ones whom he grew up before power. There's only one problem with this pshat in Rashi. The problem with it is that one of the five whose name was doubled was Yehuda. Difficult to say that Yehuda was from the weaker ones. Yehuda, Gur Aryeh is not enough. Don Gur Aryeh is amid Merav Hashem. So Rashi says that there's a Gemara in Baba Kama. In Baba Kama that explains why Yehuda's name was doubled. There was a very special reason. That's not important to us now. All right. And then he brings that in the Braisa de Sifri, Shaninu Bezos Abrocha Kimo Talmud Shalom. This medrash appears a second time. And that appears at the end of the Torah in Parshat Zot HaBracha. And in Zot HaBracha, the text is the same as the Talmud Bavli. Okay. Talmud Shalom, our Talmud. So of course these two statements identifying the Medrash as Medrash Eretz Yisrael and the Gemara as Talmud Bavli Shalom is unusual, absolutely unusual, unprecedented. If we have enough time yet, I'll show you one other place, but nothing like this, nothing compared to this. So what's the pshat? Not the pshat, Rashi wants to tell us what's the machloket between the Medrash and Talmud Bavli. The Medrash says, according to the Medrash, the ones who got the double blessing from Moshe were the strong ones. According to Talmud Bavli, the weaker ones got the double blessing. You know what I believe Rashi wants to tell us? In Eretz Yisrael, you know who needs a double blessing? The strong, because the strong are going to protect us. B'siyata d'shmaya. You know who needs a double blessing out in Chutz La'aretz and the Golos? The weaker ones, because they're going to be lost. Without a double bracha, they're going to be sunk beneath the waves of intermarriage and assimilation. Yeah. Rashi is explaining the difference between the two. The Medrash, which is Medrash Eretz Yisrael, says the strong ones got the double blessing, because we need that the strong be strong. And in Chutz La'aretz, we need that the weak be strong. They need the double blessing. That's why Rashi does something over here that he does nowhere else. Nowhere else. He tells us precisely the where the Medrash was implemented. Because it sounds like Rashi is a professor at Hebrew University, and he's giving us a footnote to tell us, so this is a citation that comes from Medrash Agada Eretz Yisrael, and this comes from TB, Talmud Bavli, Folio, such and such. None of the Rashi is explaining to us the Medrash. In Chutz La'aretz, the weak need a double blessing, and Eretz Yisrael, the strong need a double blessing. There's one other Rashi. I love this Rashi. Love it. I love them all. I love them all. In Parashat Lech Lecha, God comes to the priest of Avraham, and Avraham complains that, listen, I am childless, and the only one there is to inherit me is my servant, Damesek Eliezer. He's called Damesek Eliezer. Rashi gives three pshat and why Eliezer was called Damesek. Danaskin, I think that's the correct word. I'm not saying anything untoward that I shouldn't say. Eliezer from Damascus. So Rashi says, Lefi ha-Targum, that's number 5 down at the bottom. According to the Targum, mi Damesek hayo, he was from Damascus, isn't it? Hey, that's obviously the most simple thing to say. The man came from Damascus, so he was called the Damascaite. According to the Medrash Haggadah, you know why he was called Damesek? That midnight ride that we talked about earlier, Eliezer leads Avram's army against the four kings. He pursued them ad chova asher mismol l'Damasek, all the way to the left of Damascus. He became known, most probably, as you know, Nelson of Trafalgar, right? MacArthur of Bataan and Corregidor, right? On Manila. Great military leaders are known by the place of their greatest military feat. So he was known, this is the Eliezer. He was the one who pursued them all the way to Damascus. Lepi Medrash HaKadosh, Sherotah HaMalachim, he pursued kings at Damascus. Now come two words. It also doesn't appear in Rashi, Ubegimor Shalomu. What did I say? He quotes Talmud Bavli 2,000 times. Ubegimor Shalomu. And in our Gemara, Dorash no Trikan, they expounded the name Damesek as an acronym for a few words. Dole umashke mitoras rabo lachim. Damesek, dole. He fetches water from the spiritual well of Avraham, umashke, and he gives it to others to drink. He was the great exponent of Avraham's Torah. He would draw water and give drink from the Torah of his Rabbi Lachim. Why does Rashi here have to tell it's Talmud Bavli Shalonu? What Talmud Shalonu? One is Medrash Haggadah and the other is Talmud Shelanu. Instead, because Eretz Yisrael and Bavel, or those looked at things differently. In Eretz Yisrael, the Medrash, which we already know is Medrash Eretz Yisrael, they look at things in terms of what's necessary for survival, which is physical strength. We have to be ready to repel the enemies. We have to be ready to pursue the enemy. So the Medrash, which is Eretz Yisrael, sees Eliezer as the mighty warrior against the four superpowers of the day and pursues them all the way to Damascus. In Chutz Laaretz, where was the strength of Klal Yisrael expressed? It was expressed in Torah. They look at Eliezer not only as the mighty warrior, but they look at him also as the mighty exponent of the Torah of Avraham. Dole u'mashken Torah sparvo l'achem. But what Rashi is also saying is, there's no machloket between the Medrash and the Talmud. What the Medrash and the Talmud both are describing is the first Hesder boy in history. He is both warrior and dole u'mashken Torah sparvo l'achem. And that makes up the totality of the Jewish personality. What does it all bring us back to? Well, I'm getting right on time. What it all brings us back to is there were two ways, the Gemara described two ways to read that pasuk in Amos. Do you read it, Nafla, she has fallen, Lo tosif kun, she will not rise again? That's Chutz Laaretz read the pasuk that way. And they were right in reading it that way. Because a Jewish community that disintegrates in Chutz Laaretz, the chances of it ever rising again. Close, shalafim le'efes, nil. But b'marava amri, b'marava in Eretz Yisrael, they looked at the pasuk in a completely different and opposite light. Nafla, she's fallen. Lo tosif, never again. Matzada, what? And Gamla shall not fall again. Nafla, lo tosif. Kum, betulat Yisrael, arise. Two different world views, two different ways of looking at things. It has to be that way. There's no question about it that in so many ways that we can't even imagine, we think differently. This time of year, when I meet up with a tourist who says, what a beautiful day. What a beautiful day. It's so sunny. And I think to myself, Shemu Shemaim's old age, dog. I was depressed when I got up this morning and I saw it was a beautiful day. We need rain. We need clouds. We need wind. We need downpours. So remember, when I lived in Chutz Laaretz, what was an unhappy, gloomy, depressing day?
Rain.
A rainy day. Rain, rain, go away, come back another day. Oh, no. In Eretz Yisrael, we think differently, completely. Sun, go away, come back another day. Two different ways of thinking and looking and expressing. So therefore, they had two ways of looking at that puzzle. Nafla, lo tosif. Come, the Tulak Yisrael.
Yes.
and economically. It's a task to get a financial lesson.
Oh, wonderful.
So.